It was some 2 years ago, back on the 1st of January, the beginning of the year rather, that we were commended full-time to the work of the Lord. And the area of activity in which we engage can broadly be divided into three sections. There is first of all the section that we would simply call schoolwork, because we do work in the schools in the Glasgow area. And then there is what I will just call housing estate. Down in England, I learned that they don't know what a housing scheme is, so they call it a housing estate. And I don't know what you call it up here. In Glasgow, we call them housing schemes, but if you're English, well, a housing estate. Up in Scotland, that's a slightly more posh place than a housing scheme. But nevertheless, there are the housing scheme, there's the housing scheme work in Glasgow, and then there is what I suppose would be termed the more traditional work amongst the assemblies generally. Now, we'll try to cover as much as possible of that this evening as we go through, but I think we might find ourselves lingering over number one and number two. Let me speak to you just a little about the city of Glasgow. If you care to look at the map, you will find that the city of Glasgow, the inner city of Glasgow, consists of 800,000 people. If you were to expand that to cover what we would call Greater Glasgow, that goes out into the whole built-up area of the Glasgow area, you will find that that increases to 1,100,000, 1.1 million. And if you look, you will find that around the circumference of Glasgow, there is an area of very large and very vast housing estates, housing schemes, whatever you care to call them. And in these, there has been, over the years, some occasional work done in the gospel, but a notable fact about most of them is that there is an absence of assembly gospel testimony in these areas. Now, the two areas to which we have directed our attention particularly lie on the north side of Glasgow, one in the northwest and the other in the northeast. The area on the northwest is an area that consists of about 100,000 people, and it is what you would call in the main Drum Chapel. It goes a little beyond that, over to an area called Gerskadden and North Knightswood, but it does cover approximately 100,000 people. If you go to the east of the city, there is another large area there called Easter House, and that also consists about just about the same number of folks. So between the two of them, there is approximately 200,000 souls. If you look into these areas, you will find that there is no assembly testimony in them. In Easter House itself, there is probably one Baptist church that is very Pentecostal in nature, but the gospel, I believe, would be preached there in measure, so I am told. And if you go into Drum Chapel, you will find that there is probably one Pentecostal Christian New Life Center, I see it's called, and there is one other place that may preach the gospel. It's a little doubtful. Now, when I speak about the Pentecostals preaching the gospel and that, I'm just simply saying that they preach John 3:16. And we'll think a little beyond that of some of the other things that are involved in that this evening. So there is very little gospel testimony. And we started in there 2 years back in January. Now, some of you have heard me say that I have a tracking team that works with me in the Drum Chapel area, and there are three brethren, and the youngest is 77 and the oldest is 82. So they're quite young at heart, but they work away well in these areas. And I got my team together, all raring to go, and there they were. I think I've told some of you we met in the Knightswood Gospel Hall every morning at 10 o'clock. There's one brother there who in 1932 got the great distinction of earning a tea-making certificate, which he has. And as a result of that, well, you know what gift we reckoned he had. He was the tea maker. And just to prove he could do it, he brought the certificate up, because after the first day, we didn't believe him that he had a tea making certificate. But however, there he is. And we looked at the whole map of Drum Chapel, and we wondered how to start. It's very, very difficult, you know, to know how to start. Where do you start? Because we're starting from coal. We don't know anybody. And we don't know anything. We're starting really from cold, with no contacts at all. So we got our tracks together and we planned it all out. And in one very cold, rainy, wet January day, we set out. And I had gone to the police station in Drum Chapel, and I had asked them where I would park my car. And the police sergeant said to me, "Well, if you take it in there, we'll be looking for it this afternoon. So you better just park it in the pound." So that's where we got to park our car, and we took it in there, and we walked into Drumchapel, and we had this map all laid out, but we got kind of lost, and the map got all kind of soggy, and he would be 79 or 80 then, said, well, I think we'd just better start here, because if we don't start here, we'd be starting somewhere else, and we don't know where that is. So I wondered for 2 years the logic of that, but I'm sure he was right. So we just started simply going to the doors and knocking the doors and starting to give out gospel tracts. There was nothing else. To be honest, there is always this thing that when you go into the work, you know exactly what you're going to do and everything's all set out. Well, maybe it is with some folks. It certainly wasn't with us. We really didn't know what to expect. And we didn't know how else to tackle it. I'll be quite honest about that. We just didn't know what else can you do. We tried to get permission to have open airs in the shopping centre, but the shopping centre, believe it or not, is owned by P&O, the shipping people. I don't know what the connection is, but they turned us down. They refused to give us permission to have open-air meetings. And so the police weren't very happy about having open-air meetings. I spoke to the police about having a portable hall, and the droll reaction of the sergeant is, it'll be very portable, he said. So that was dismissed, and so we were down to the tracking. Well, we started knocking on the doors, and let me tell you just about some of the things that we found that really astonished me. We found, for instance, that the problem of drug addiction is very, very strong in that area. We found that children start on drugs when they're 14, and once they've got them, of course they've got them, they believe for life. We found that in the average street, there would probably be, the average road, quite large streets in these areas, there would be an average of what they call six pushers. And then above these, there are folks that they call ringers, and they supply the pushers, and then above that, there is the fella with the Mercedes and the Jaguar and the villas all over the world. And so that was a tremendous problem. We come across folks who do spend something like £200 a day on drugs. And the only way to satisfy that, of course, is to steal cars. And that, of course, is the background in Glasgow to so much of the crime. It is just a desperate cry for folks who need money to meet the cost of their drug addiction. So that was one problem that we found right away. The second problem that we found in these areas was a tremendous moral problem. And that problem gets worse by the day. There is a dreadful problem morally. It is very unusual. We were in Aberdeen this afternoon, and I was remarking to my wife how strange it was to see in Aberdeen, and I don't know exactly what things are like in Aberdeen, but for me it was very, very strange to see so many young mothers with wedding rings on. That is the exception there. But very, very rare to find that. Very, very rare in these areas, if ever. It's really an exception. And when I say that, I mean that. It's a very, very rare thing to find that. And so there would be a tremendous moral problem. And, well, that would be enough to be going on with, I think. We found that right at the beginning. Now, we worked in Drumchapel for some time, and then I'll tell you later we moved over into Easterhouse, but we found that the problems there were exactly the same. They were no different. And in some ways, they were even worse. Now, so we started tracking. I'll tell you about the schoolwork. I meant to speak about that first, but we'll just go on with this now. So we started tracking, and we found some very interesting people. There are one or two ground rules that you learn right at the beginning. One is never to sit in a soft seat. Just think about that, and I'll explain. If you don't understand why I'm saying that, I'll tell you later why. Just ask me. Never sit in a soft seat, simply to say because you would take more out than you keep to kin. And one or two other things that we found, there were things like that you've got to keep in mind. But we did find this. Strange thing was that there still were people who were concerned about eternity. We found an appalling ignorance of the Word of God. We found children of 8, 9 and 10 who had never seen a Bible and didn't know what you meant when you spoke about the Bible. We found adults in their 20s who had no clue at all what you're speaking about when you were speaking about the gospel. I was one day walking up a road and we were giving out tracts, and there was in the home, there was a racket coming from the house. And to let you see it was terraced houses, and there was a pavement and a road, and then lock-up garages, and then another road, and then another row of terraced houses. So the two rows of houses were fairly far apart. And in the one terraced house, there was a band, at least I learned it was a band, practicing. And the lady in one of the other terraced houses had opened her bedroom window and was remonstrating. And the sort of gist of our conversation was, could you please turn the volume down a little, please? Now, I came to that house, and there was two girls sitting in a car at the door. And I asked if I could speak to the people inside, and they said to me, do you want to book a gig? And I said, no, I would just like to speak to them. So I went upstairs, up to the bedroom, and there was three very nice young men there. And these young fellows were practicing with all these things that go, because nobody knows how to play instruments nowadays, all these computer-controlled hypocritical things that makes you think it's an orchestra, and it's no, it's only a wee thing this size, you see. So they were playing along with that, and they said, well, what do you want? They stopped. And I said, I've come to tell you about the gospel. Now, one of them, probably 1920-21, quite genuinely asked me, what do you mean by the gospel? That was a genuine question. What do you mean by the gospel? Never heard of it. And we were able to tell them a little bit about the gospel. They told me to sit down, and they switched off, when they call them their instruments, they switched off their computer equipment, and they listened for a little about the gospel. The other problem that we found in these areas was a tremendous problem of unemployment. In that particular area, there is 80% adult male unemployment. Because the unemployment, you see, the folks in that area would be semi-skilled and unskilled labour. They used to go to steelworks, shipyards and mines. There's no steelworks, very few shipyards, and there's no mines. So there's nothing for them to do. And they're just wandering about the street all day. And you know, it's very easy to be very critical. And it's very easy to be very critical and say, well, you know, they should just get up out of the house and go away and get a job. But the fact of the matter is, it's not just as easy as that. And there are many of them don't work because they don't want to work, but there are many of them don't work because they can't get work. And if they could, they would. And it's easy to be critical, but when you're rubbing shoulders with them, you become a little bit more sympathetic as to some of the problems. If you're 28 and you left school when you were 15 or 16, you've never had a job, it's very, very difficult to think about working. You know, that's the culture. That's the way you live, particularly when your father never worked either. So you see, that's the problem. So, we started the tracking. Now, let me tell you about one or two of the folks that we came across in these early days. We came across, and some of you have heard the name, and I, just maybe 2 weeks ago again, paid him another visit, we came across a man, and it was right at the very beginning. And he came to the door, and he was wearing what I call a Drumchapel simmet. Now, it's got three buttons up here, and it comes to there and there, and it's got ear holes that weren't put there by the maker, but are there. And I don't know where they sell them. I've never been able to find where they're sold, but there certainly is a big market. Now, he came to the door, and we gave him the tract. And he said to me, I'm saved. I said, I'm born again. Well, I could smell the drink. And he said to me, are you the brethren? And I remember saying, well, no, all of them, but, you know. Are you the brethren, he said. Well, you listen to what he said to me. He says, I'm saved, he said. I used to go to Harley Street Gospel Hall. Well, you see, when he said, I'm saved, you could have picked me off the floor. When he said, I used to go to Harley Street Gospel Hall, you could have picked me off the pavement. He said, would you like to come in? I said, we would. So we came in. We noted the alcohol about. He'd only two books in the house. One was a revised version of the Bible, and the other was a King James version. A Catholic who had got saved at a Pentecostal gospel rally in Anderson, whose wife had left him and taken the children after he got saved, who had gone from bad to worse. And he opened the scriptures to me, and he said, that's me. And he read the little verse, lest I be cast away. He said, I'm finished. I'm cast away. He said, I'm going to heaven, but God can do nothing with me here. Well, you see, we read with him, we visited him back and forward over the time. He's gone up and down. He's on an up at the moment. He started again going back to meetings, so he's on and up just at the moment. And some of you know, over the years, it's been seesaw with him, up and down and up and down. But he's on and up in the moment, so please pray for George Ross. Some of you have asked you to pray for him before, but pray for him again, because he does need prayer and help. He had his house filled with brown cardboard boxes. To get into the door, you had to turn sideways, you know, and go like that. My wife says it doesn't make much difference if I do that, but if you turn sideways, you had to go into the house like that, and the place was filled with brown cardboard boxes. And I've learned one thing in going into these places, how through the verses, ask no question for conscience sake. You know, you don't ask questions. But he said to me one day, what am I going to do with all these boxes? Or what are the jobs? He said, my son brought them here and told them to leave them. He said he'd leave them for a few days and come and pick them up. I said, what's in them? He said, I don't know. I said, let's open them. Now, there must have been, I don't know how many boxes. The whole house and the living room, I was filled with them. And in it, there was Hasselblad cameras. Now, I know enough about cameras to know that Hasselblads don't cost 25p, you know, they're very expensive. He says, what am I going to do with them? And I thought, well, here's a problem. And he said, he gave me the answer before I could answer it. He said to me, let's pray about it, he says. So that was a peculiar prayer meeting. What do you pray about, eh? And I just prayed that the Lord might solve the problem of the cameras. That was all. Didn't know what to say. Again, these full-time men are supposed to have all the answers, aren't they? We try and kid on with them, but I tell you, it doesn't always work out. Now, my son was preaching at Knightswood Gospel Hall just a few days later, maybe 10 days later, and he saw the name. He must have thought it was me, and down he came. And he said to him, tell your father, just a few days after he left, his prayer was answered. He'll know what you mean. So I went in to see him. No cameras. I said, what happened, George? He says, my son came and picked them up and took them away after months. And he says, I did what he asked. I never asked him where they were going. And that's the boy you're beginning to learn. I never asked, he said. I just let him take them away. So pray, please, for George Ross. Now, we worked in that area for some time in Drumchapel. We held children's meetings in the Kinfauns Adult Education Community Centre, to give it its great title. And community centres, and I'll address that in a minute, are not ideal for gospel work. There's a lot going on in community centres. I didn't know until I went in, you know what karaoke is? Well, I didn't know what that was, because next door to it there was karate, and then there was karaoke, and there was dog obedience classes. So there you are. And we had children's meetings as well. And I just couldn't fathom all this at all, what all this was. But the only thing I knew about them all was they were all very noisy. The dogs were noisy. The karate, I couldn't understand why folks dressed in pyjamas who didn't hit each other made noises like, ooh, ah, ooh, ooh. And nobody was actually hit, but very noisy. And the karaoke as well. Well, that was something else. So we had children's meetings. And we did, let me tell you again, we did good numbers, and there was good interest. But when we tried to book that room again for further children's meetings, our request was turned down. And it was turned down because it had to be referred to the Strathclyde Region Social and Recreation Subcommittee. And the reason it had to be referred to that, they said, was because it was being used for religious purposes. And the purpose of this place was not for religion. Now, we did seek to apply for permission. We've never heard. It just gets kicked around. So that is one of the problems that we have, and I'll address that in a moment, getting premises. Some of you may remember me telling you about the lady who turned up the very first night of the meetings, and no children were there, but she came in and she shouted at me at 6:30, are you John Grant? And I said that. She says, are you born again? I said, I am. She said, you wouldn't know it for your literature. I said, oh, well. I said, now, that's interesting. She said, have you got the gift of the Spirit? I said, oh, I have. Let me know the way you think. She says, can I see your stuff for the Waynes? I said, you can. So she went in and she took her husband, who was called Sean. And I've met him a good number of times, and I've never heard Sean say a word yet. He goes like that. It doesn't dare go like that. John goes like that. So, she looked at the literature, and some of it was John Ritchie's stuff, and she came back and she says, it's quite sound, she said. Quite sound. And she went away and she brought a van load of children. The Pentecostals, they go to what is called the Bear's Den Full Gospel Fellowship, and she brought a good number of children, Jackie and Sean, and they continued over the times of the meetings to bring them along. Now, these children knew absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. They had no knowledge of the Word of God at all. Absolutely none. And as I say, when we went back for the next session to have more, we were turned down. And we haven't been able to get back in to the Kinfonds Adult Education Centre. Obviously, the Strathclyde Region Social and Recreation Subcommittee are still considering this very weighty matter. There's an expression coming into these places now, and they say it's got to be politically correct. Now, I'm not quite sure what that expression means, but they tell me this is not politically correct. And they said, you see, if we let you in, we'll need to let in the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Mormons. And I said to them, well, I'm not stopping you letting anybody in. You're free to let anybody in who you like. All I want is the thing there for an hour. You know, every evening for an hour. But we were turned down. Or we haven't been turned down, we haven't been accepted. Previously, you just went in and you paid the fella £1 and you got the room. The wee man at the desk just gave you. But there you are. So, we worked round that area. We saw one man make a profession at that time, and his children came to the children's meeting. He had been given a tract. We give out, one thing about the tracts that we give out is that you cannot give a tract with a lot of writing on it. They'll no read a lot. And the tract that was used mainly in these days was Four Things God Wants You to Know. It's just scripture, and it's very quick. I don't like disaster tracts. I don't like long-winded tracts for the simple reason the people I deal with won't read them. So he had got one of these tracts, and he made a profession after some months. And the problem I want to address again in these areas, that he's now going along to a Pentecostal place, and frankly, that's not what I'm in the business of. You know, I'm in the business of seeking to see folks baptized and added to local assemblies. That's what my business. I mean, the job of the evangelist isn't finished when a man gets saved. You know, that's not the purpose of the evangelist. The purpose is to see them in assembly fellowship. And that is a problem that I'll address before I finish in these areas and suggest one or two lessons that we've learned in that line. Now, the preacher's dream, no clock, but I've got my watch here, unfortunately. Time's going on. Let me tell you a little about the other side of Glasgow, the place called Easter House. Now, these places, again, there is an assembly in Glasgow at Sandy Hills, and the assembly at Sandy Hills has a Sunday school in Easter House. So we were able to use that as a sort of base. And we had special meetings with the little Sunday school in Easter House. It's held in Wellhouse Primary School. And we started with the children there. And there was a little girl there, you know, and she stayed through the meetings. She would only maybe be 7 or 8. She knew absolutely nothing. And she knew, by the end of the series of meetings, she could repeat all the I ams of John's Gospel. Very bright wee girl. I can see her yet, with her wee jeans on, tapping her feet as she went through them. You see, she used to tap her feet. She had trainers that were too big for her. And she had a wee pair of jeans that were too wee for her. And she had a wee kind of t-shirt on. She used to tap her feet and kind of look up like this. And I am. And away she went. And you know, by the end of the meeting, she could repeat them all. Every one of them. You know, and she was only 7 or 8. And it was only, I just learned maybe a couple of weeks after the meetings were over, that she had taken meningitis and died, the wee girl. You see? And I went to visit the parents. The mother, rather, I went to visit the mother, and, you know, it was a mother who couldn't care less. You know, even although the wee girl was away, I didn't know until after the funeral was over, but the mother couldn't care less. It was just as if the wee girl had never existed, really. She had God. You see, these are wee folks who never know what it is to be loved by anybody. you know. But, you know, she did know, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And she could repeat that before she was taken away. So you see, there are folks like that. Now, with the problems, I've got to be conscious of the time, because it's trying just to get it all in. With the other problems, one of the problems, the problems that we faced were no actual location in the housing schemes, no base. The other problem is that when you go knocking the doors in these places, in a lot of places, they won't open them for you. They're frightened. And I could tell you some amusing stories. I could tell you about going up a close, you know what a close, again, down in England, a close is a posh place. It's, in Glasgow, it's not just as posh as that, unless it's a Wally close. But going up a close and somebody having a difference of opinion with the lady of his life and taking an axe to the front door to get in. She wasn't letting him in. And so what do? You get an axe and you open the door by means of an axe. Now, we went up, and the thing you do in these places is that you never ask anybody anything. You never ask what are you doing and why are you doing it. You just say, fine day, nice to see you. And so we went up to the top and back down. And on the way down, I handed the man the tract. And then the head came through the door, the lady on the other side. She wanted to know what I wanted, so I spoke to her and gave her the tract. And then when we turned away, the head was doing the axe man started again. That's how it goes. Now, can I say, by the way, that I don't know why he was trying again. He was murdered when he got in. It was him. He needed the axe, I can tell you. Some of the ladies are very, let me say, they're evil. So, you have these problems. People won't open the door, you see. So, before the Lord, we considered this for some time, and we ended up producing a card. Now, this is the card that we use. You won't be able to read it from here. But on that side, there is a little gospel message. It says this is a genuinely free offer. And it's a little gospel message. And John 3:16, and we call ourselves the Gospel Distribution Service. There is no such, it's not an organization. You're looking at the Gospel Distribution Service. It's just got to be given a name, and I thought that was as good a name as any, the Gospel Distribution Service. And we say we have no connections with Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses. And over here, they are invited, you see, to tear this off. You can tear that off. And they put their name and address there, and it's free post to return it. And they put their name and address, and they have three options. Can you please forward a New Testament? Can you please forward gospel literature regularly? Or can you please visit me? And they tick what they want. And so, you see, we put that in. Now, that has worked very, very well. Now, some folks say, oh, you don't knock the door. That's not faithfulness. But you see, we're getting a better response from that. And we're getting people. And when somebody here wants to see you, you know that they want to see you. Well, there's one step beyond that. Sometimes folks put the names in of people they know for a joke, you know. So what you do is when one of these comes in and they say, could you please visit me, you write to them and say, thank you for the card. And here is another little card. And can you just write on it, please, when you would like me to call? And so by the time you get the two of them, you know that you're in business. We send the Trinitarian New Testament, a little, not the tiny little one, there's a tiny little one you can slip into your pocket, one slightly bigger than that. And we also send with that John Blanchard's excellent book, The Ultimate Questions. We send that. That goes out, and last week we sent, for those who were requiring regular gospel literature, the second lot. There's time now, and we sent there How to Be a Christian. John McCoyd, who was a missionary in Ethiopia, has an excellent book, How to Be a Christian, together with another book, Consider Jesus. That went out last week. Now, let me tell you about some of the people we've met through that, and remember them in prayer. I want you to remember Linda Muir. Now, Linda Muir is a Mormon, or goes to the Mormon place. The moral problems are appalling. She has 5 children, and she is about to become the 3rd wife of a man with 9 children. So there you are, there's 14 of them. Now, the first morning I called, my son and I went. You never go on your own to visit anybody. My son and I went. She had just finished having tea with her intended 2nd wife. You know, so this is the one who he was divorcing, and they were having a nice wee tea party together. And then he left, and she left, and we get in. That woman is very concerned about the gospel. As a matter of fact, she put her daughter's name on the card because she didn't want Chick, who's the man, to know it was her. And she put her daughter's name on the card. So remember Linda Muir. Remember Linda Muir in prayer, because she really is concerned about salvation. There was another man, John Docherty. Now, John Docherty telephoned, and he telephoned. He said he'd lost his card, and I'm not sure that it ever was in an area that we gave them out. He wrote. He got the name, and he wrote, and he asked him. We sent him the stuff, and he telephoned, and one Tuesday night, maybe a fortnight ago, 3 weeks ago, and he telephoned and asked the question that we all like to hear, how can I have my sins forgiven? Now, that's a good question to get asked, isn't it? That leaves you plenty of scope. How can I have my sins forgiven? Give me his background. He's a Roman Catholic, brought up in the Roman Catholic Church. He had left that and gone into Satanism and the occult. And he said to me, what it's left with is nothing but a deep black depression. And I said, well, it would. Certainly get nothing else but that. So we spoke about things, etc., and sent him more stuff. I'm sorry to say that he telephoned just a few nights ago to say, don't send any more, I'm going back to the Roman Catholic Church. But we're not finished with him yet. We'll be sending him more stuff. So remember, John Docherty, his father's an alcoholic, and he's a bachelor, and he stays at home, and he is a man who really does need prayer. These are the kind of folks who really do need some interest in prayer. So these are the kind of folks that we meet. It's interesting to see throughout these areas the fact that the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons are oftentimes the first people on the doorstep when folks are concerned about spiritual things. They go around the place, and we have problems. The wee boy said to me at one of the meetings, he said, I'll not be back, Mr. Grant. I'm going to be an altar boy. I said, you're going to be an altar boy? What? He says, aye, he says. I said, now what do you do? He says, if we're an altar boy, he says, the priest takes us to see Celtic on Saturday, then we got a fish supper and go to the pictures. Here you are. I said, oh, we can't compete with that, son. But you should still come to the Sunday school, nevertheless. You see, these are the things, and that's the extent to which they're prepared to go, and they've got to go, just to get people into these things. What a dreadful thing it is, a dreadful thing. So I want you to remember them in prayer. This clock is running over, it's only 7 or 8 minutes still to go. Now, let me tell you, I've only glossed over the surface. You know, we could tell you about other folks and other things, but that's just a little sample of the kind of situation that you find in these places. No testimony, no scriptures. There is a brother who got saved, a drug addict he was, he got saved maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Alec Catchpole by name. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a young man. He is being very well taught in scriptures. John Riddle has had a good influence over him and other good brethren down south. And he works in the Broadwater Farm Estate down in Tottenham, which is the estate on which the policeman was murdered a number of years ago. You may recall that the policeman was decapitated during a riot. And he was up in Bridget Weir, and I took him up to Drumchapel, and I said to him, Alec, you know, the folks up here think this is bad, but it'll be nothing to you, so don't expect anything. And after he looked round for about 10 minutes, he says, John, this is worse than anything we have down in England. And the thing that impressed him, he said, where are all the cars? And the folks here didn't have cars. There's no cars up here. We don't have cars. Oh, he said, there's plenty of money down where I am. It's all well gone, but plenty of money. And what he couldn't get away with was the abject poverty, the absolute poverty of the place. Now, again, you might say it's their own fault and all that. I'm not here to talk about that. That's just a fact. And children suffer because of that. Children suffer. So these are the kind of people. Now, let me tell you, our exercise really, you see, is to, we've learned lessons. We've made mistakes in the past couple of years. We've had other meetings that I don't have time to tell you about and that sort of thing. But we have made mistakes. We've got some things wrong. We've got some things right. Because we very much are kind of experimenting in a sense. But what we have been looking for now, we're before the Lord. The work really stands at a crossroads. And we're before the Lord about 2 or 3 issues. And I want you to remember them in prayer. The first thing is that we would like to get some permanent premises in these places. You know, we would like to get that. Now, there is a YMCA building that's available in Easter House. It's a little big for our needs. And the big problem associated with that is that the YMCA has more or less given it over to the locals who just use it as what we call a house. They just go there and sit there and spend the day there. And anybody who puts them out is going to be in trouble, in deep trouble. You know, the place will be destroyed. You know, the folks will not stand for that. But it's an ideal place, and it's a great site. And our exercise would be to have the people in there during the day, because one way that you can get the gospel over, you see, in these places, I don't have time to go into all this, but in these places, if you have a gospel meeting, and you ask them to sing a hymn, they walk out. Now, you better believe that. That's what happens. Because they haven't the foggiest idea what a hymn is. Never sung a hymn in their life. And, you know, they just get up and walk out. And I can well remember a reply in the Believer's magazine. Well, I don't remember, because I read it in a book. I wasn't born at the time, but I remember reading it in one of these books of the... The question was about certain practices in the gospel. Were they right? And the answer, the brother said, yes, these are not practices that Scripture would sanction, but there are others that we do. Now, I'm just saying I believe this, and I'm just telling you what the answer was. He says, where have we ever told in the Bible to sing hymns with unbelievers and make them say things that are not true? Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't have gospel meetings and singing hymns. Don't say I came to say that. I'm not saying that. Can I repeat that? I'm not saying that. Just in case something like that. I'm not saying that. You got it? What I'm saying, in a place like that, you cannot get people to stand up and sing hymns. So all you can do with them is sit them round a table and tell them about the gospel. Now, I think that's quite a scriptural way. The Apostle Paul, that's recorded here, he disputed with the Jews, and you say, oh, but that was the Jews in the synagogue, but read the rest of the verse, and in the marketplace daily. He disputed. And it's quite a scriptural way to speak to people. Now, the other thing that we're concerned about is there is a Wednesday market in Easter House. They take over the car park at the shopping centre, and it's an ideal place to have a little stall or something. We're before the Lord about that. If we had premises, you see, my idea would be that we have that kind of situation where people come in and the gospel is discussed. And then there would be children's work, and then there would be gospel work, more of a kind of meeting type. But there are also in these areas people who have been saved and are ill-taught, a lot of Pentecostals. And it would be a good opportunity to have what we call ministry meetings, but Bible teaching meetings of a very simple nature for any who would be saved, to teach them the things of God, because they're ill-taught and untaught. No teaching at all. It would be good to have them taught, and a place like that would be ideal for that kind of thing. You see, the other difficulty is this, that it's not every assembly that can cope with these kind of folks. You know what I mean when I say that? Not every assembly can cope with them. And that is a difficulty and a problem. There are some assemblies that can cope with them ideally. I can remember George Ross coming with me to a particular assembly. And he was there. And he said to me, see that preacher? He was looking at me all night. And he says, he thought I wasn't saved, and here I am. He says, you know why he thought I wasn't saved? Because I've got a jersey on. Huh? You see? And the brother just preached at him all night. You know, the man was sitting there and he preached at him all night. See, there's a way of preaching the gospel. If you see a stranger in the hall, don't look at him all the time as if, you know, and lay it on to him. And if there are strangers in the hall who don't know anything about anything, because for an unsaved man to come into a gospel hall is in as strange ground as I would be going into a Masonic lodge. I'm not saying we are Masonic lodges, but you know what I mean? I don't know what goes on there. I've no idea. You say, pray, do you kneel down, do you stand up? So a good chairman of a meeting lets it be known what's happening without making it obvious he's speaking to one or two people. You know? He might say, now we're just going to bow our heads for a moment to pray, just remaining in our seats. You know, and that sort of thing. And we'll stand up to say, these are little things. But you see, we're being with these kind of folks in gospel meetings, I've learned about the things that are a difficulty. And so in the likes of these places, we would like to get a presence. Now, the other thing about that is, the work really is, And the other thing I want you to pray for particularly is that we do need other helpers in this work. You know, I've got my team in Drumchapel. The 82-year-old, I was speaking to him the other, we go back to his house and his wife makes us some sandwiches at lunchtime. And it was only last week he was speaking about a brother and he said, he's really past it, you know, he's getting on. And I said, John, he's 7 years younger than you. He said, he's 75. I said, you're only as young as you feel, he said. And he's a very active man, very active man. But there he is, 82 years of age. And one day last week, it was absolutely coming down in torrents. It was storming off the ground. It literally was. And I had to drag him off the streets of Drumchapel. I said, you'll get your death of pneumonia, man. You're getting old. We had to drag him off the streets. His big regret was that all the high flats had been done. Because that's what you do in the rain, you see. You do the high flats in the rain. All the high flats had been done. That was his big regret. 82 years of old. You young folks, listen to that. Eh? 82. And all annoyed that he had to stop the job early and go back home. And it was a youngster like me that pulled him off the job. You see, now, we do need help in these areas. Now, I take my Bible class up to Easter House one Saturday a month. And they distribute leaflets and do other things. And that is helpful. But we do need, particularly there's going to be premises, we need mature brethren and mature sisters. Because it's not everybody, you see. You have to sit and listen to things. And the last thing you've got to do is raise your hands in horror and walk away. You've just to sit and look them in the eye and listen and say nothing. I'm not saying you never say anything, but when you hear the story for the first time, you just let it wash over you. You've got to do that. And it's a difficult thing at times. Now, my time's gone. I haven't given me... I was going to say, I need 3 report means. I don't mean that. But, just remember that work, please, in these areas. Because of late, it's been very much in my heart of late, that what did the apostle do? He went to a place and he stuck at it. He went to Athens and he saw, for whatever reason, however he discerned it in Athens, he discerned that it wouldn't be profitable to stay there. So he moved on down to Corinth. But when he got to Corinth, we know, of course, he was instructed of God that there was much people in this city. You know the way I look at it? I look at Glasgow and I say, surely there are folks in these areas. If you take Drumchapel and Easter House, there are folks in these areas who are going to get saved. By God's grace, they're going to get saved. We believe, don't we, that this Friday folks have got saved. There's folks get saved in Glasgow today. There's folks get saved in Aberdeen today. I believe that. I really believe that. And so you see, what you say is, well, these folks are going to get saved. It's up to us in assembly fellowship to make sure that we are the workers who are there. Because too often it's other folks who are there. And if you take the city of Glasgow and you take all these areas, we really do need, and I'm not saying we don't need it in rural areas like Lossiemouth, but I'm just speaking about these urban areas at the moment. We do need effort concentrated in these areas. After all, Paul went to the centres of population. Now, why did he do that? Because he could get the people there who would get saved, and then they would move out and out with the gospel. But he went to the urban area where the folks were. And Glasgow is such an area, and I've told you very, very little tonight. The time's going on over so quickly. We have schools we go to. Can I have 2 or 3 minutes? It's a terrible thing to ask anybody from the platform, because even if he would like to say no, he can't. But just a minute or two, excuse me, going a little over. We get classes in the schools. I was given the choice of either taking assemblies or taking classes, and I decided to take classes. I get the class for half an hour, and normally the teachers go out. For instance, in the secondary school, Linwood, a little bit out, but Linwood is another place. Secondary school. We get in there, for instance, under the guidance curriculum for some reason, to have 4 weeks with third, fourth and fifth year on what is Christianity. You see, now that's good. And the first day I went into the classroom that work is carried out in, the room was surrounded, completely surrounded by stuff about Islam. All about Islam, right round the room. And very little, just one little thing, maybe 4 inches by 4 inches about Christianity. the Islamic laws of ablution. That was all one wall. The history of what they call the furthest mosque, that was on the other wall. The furthest mosque we know as the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. And so you see, there are folks, teenagers, and in the primary schools, we've got a little curriculum going that starts with primary one, what Jesus did. And right up, and a good brother who's in education told me he got the titles right, for instance, primary 7, it's the history, the growth and the development of the Christian church in the first century. You know it as the Acts of the Apostles, so do I. But that's what the course is called, the history and growth of the Christian church in the first century, the Acts of the Apostles. So we're able to go through that curriculum. And we give them verses to learn, paste them onto a bit of cardboard, and they take them away with them, and they get prizes. And some of them, some of these children can now say half of John 14. There are chapters like that, Isaiah 53, Psalm 23, things like that. So remember all that work. I'll need to finish now. Remember what in Glasgow, stand on a crossroads, because I really do feel that we haven't yet got the answer to areas like that. We're still looking for the answer. See, the answer isn't. The cards have been a big help, because that enables us to keep regular contact with people. But there's no substitute for being there, and being in the place, and getting to know people, and building up contacts. There's no substitute for that. There's no quick way of evangelism. And it appeared to me that maybe, imagine saying it, I was going to say the method Paul used was best. Of course it is. But the district there. Maybe for a little while, for a year or so. And not to say, well, we'll never do anything else, but that will be the main activity for that time. And let us see. Could you please remember these things in prayer? I'm sorry to have gone over the time. I've told you so very little. But at least it's giving you just a little bit of flavour of something that's being done there.